This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Welcome, my name is Travis. I'm an intelligence analyst at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. And today we have Dean Barada, the Analysis Bureau Chief. And what brings us here today is to discuss ICE's new English language magazine, Ramaya. This is their 11th edition. So to start, can you tell us a little bit about what Ramaya is?
Sure. So every month, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, known as ISIS or ISIL, depending on where you're from, has issued out a propaganda online magazine. We're primarily concerned with the English language version of that. It comes out in a number of languages now. But this is designed to provide guidance, information, morale-boosting activities for its supporters globally. And this is the 11th edition of this version. Prior to Ramaya, there was another magazine called Dabiq that they ran for, more than a year. And then they had to change the name because they lost the city of Dabiq in Syria, and they changed it to Ramaya, which means Rome.
Excellent. And in this 11th edition, what are some of the main themes that they discuss?
So there's a couple interesting things about this magazine. The first is ISIS is pretty consistent, has been pretty consistent in terms of when they release these magazines. It's almost always in the first week of the month. And so this was interesting because this one came out on the 13th of July. It's not hugely late, but it's a little late. It was a little unusual in terms of how long it took them to put it out. And that is might be because of some of the battlefield losses that they've been suffering over the past year or so are really starting to take hold. But in terms of the contents, it's about a 60-page magazine. The most important thing for listeners, since we're the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, the first thing we look through when we go through this is any mention or indication that they're interested in our area. And we didn't see any mention of New Jersey or New York. And in fact, I didn't see any references to any locations in the United States throughout the whole document. Now, there were several photos that were America-related in there. Particularly, there were several photos of the president in there. There was one photo of an armored car that appeared to be in New York City. Now, that photo was really in conjunction with an article I'll talk about in a second about theft and economic damage. So it didn't appear to me to be a photo that was explicitly targeting a specific geographic location. And there was certainly no text to indicate that. But even so, we're sort of aware when we see images that are kind of close to us. And also, the only other image I saw was one of a U.S. soldier or Marine. The soldier's face was obscured from view, so there was no indication of who that person was. And again, the context in which that photo was there was really designed to talk about a more general theme rather than that individual soldier.
Now, when discussing how their operatives or sympathizers should steal, they mentioned steal from the kuffar, which are the infidels. What kind of justification do they give in order to kind of convey their message?
So yeah, this was interesting. There was a really long article laying out sort of a lot of religious justification for how and why followers and sympathizers of ISIS could and should basically do economic damage to their enemies. And this is a theme that they built on from an earlier issue of Ramaya, where they outlined a number of methods. And some of them seemed a little strange, right? So it was talking about breaking contracts, rent things and then don't return them or don't pay for them. A lot of it seemed really sort of petty criminal stuff. Steal stuff, go into a retail store and steal stuff. And somehow that's going to strike a blow against the enemies of ISIS. And this article really didn't go into any specifics or a great deal of detail about what to do, but really it was giving justifications supposedly from the Quran allowing this sort of behavior. And that is something that ISIS has traditionally done as they advocate behavior which almost everyone recognizes is illegal, immoral, unreligious, that sort of thing. They will come out with lengthy defenses of that, attempting to provide religious justification for it. So the most notable was early on when ISIS attacked some Yazidi communities and took a number of women as sex slaves. And they produced a long article supposedly justifying that practice and placing it within some sort of, attempting to place it within a religious context. So it's interesting that they devoted, I don't know, 4 or 5 pages to this, but it's all sort of justification for doing criminal activity, you know, or terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of women, women have played a crucial role in ISIS's message to their sympathizers. Can you expand on that and how they emphasize that in this edition of Ramayah?
Yeah, over the past several issues, it seems they are devoting more space to what the role is of women. So I think last issue, there was an article about what the role of the wife should be in a good, quote unquote, Islamic life. And they've been providing a lot of guidance for what women should do. Now, for the most part, within ISIS, that has been the role of maintaining the household, raising the next generation of ISIS fighters. It's been that sort of thing. What we've seen in Iraq and Syria recently is as ISIS has come under increasing military pressure, they have been using women more and more as suicide bombers. I just saw an article the other day where I think they estimated about 20 women who were used very recently in terms of suicide bombers. So that's a little different for them. They justify that because they say, you know, the more on the defensive, the more their homes are at risk, they can take more and more desperate measures to counter those. But the role of women and trying to include women within sort of the ISIS universe, they are devoting more and more space to that.
And that's very interesting, especially as ISIS continues to come under pressure from coalition forces in Syria and Iraq, and how their messaging is starting to shift towards what can women do to secure their place in the caliphate.
And also, I think it's important to note that the role of women, when you had a caliphate, right, when a caliphate is essentially, it's a state, it's an actual piece of territory that they can claim as their own. It's important. You have to have women there. You can't just have fighters. If you are going to propose that you have a nation and people should come to it, that means everything that a country should have, which is families and women and children and doctors and, you know, everything that you need to make a country run. So ISIS needs to maintain, it needs to be more than just guys with guns. It needs to be able to maintain this fiction that they are a whole society.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of ISIS coming under some more pressure and controlling territory, in the past few months, we've seen ISIS have some crushing losses, particularly the lost city of Mosul and the current battle and operations for Raqqa and Syria. How is this going to impact their propaganda in the future, if this type of propaganda will continue, or how will it evolve?
So it's been interesting. I think we'll continue to see ISIS propaganda output at a fairly high quality level. There was just an arrest in Germany last month of a couple guys who were involved with ISIS propaganda. So you don't need to be in Iraq and Syria to develop a slick online magazine. You can do that anywhere in the world, and certainly there are sympathizers all over. So I think I would be surprised if ISIS had not already distributed its propaganda capabilities in other parts of the globe so that they can continue that on. That's been very important for them. In terms of the focus of their propaganda, I think we're starting to see some interesting things. So this issue, they claimed responsibility for 2 attacks, one in France and one in Belgium, that weren't really successful. No deaths resulted from either one of those attacks. Now, they claim it's a success because it spread fear. And in some sense, that's true. The point of terrorism, right, it's cliched, is to terrorize. But I'm not entirely sure if this was sort of the heyday of ISIS, that they would have taken the time out to acknowledge these folks, at least as much as they did. So that's interesting. Another theme that kind of feeds on this topic is they spent a lot of time talking about their hatred of Shia Muslims and Iran in particular. So we've seen that that's been a thread throughout their propaganda quite a bit. But we've seen, it feels like in the past few issues, we've seen more and more discussion about their targeting of other Muslims, whether it's the Shia or whether it's the Turks. There's a lot of people they don't like. And so that's a difference from what we've seen from Al-Qaeda propaganda historically, where they spent a lot of time trying to make a large community of Muslims and sort of talk about Muslim solidarity. ISIS is still in this sort of mindset where they're trying to fight everybody.
Now, it's interesting you bring that point up, because you look at the dynamics of Iraq right now and how you have the Shia militia groups, the Kurdish forces, the Iraqi military, and a Shia government. So it's very interesting that they are really pushing that anti-Shia, anti-Iranian mindset, maybe to counter some of that.
Yeah, and ISIS takes a really hard line. They think if you are not 100% in their camp, they consider you 100% against them. There's not a lot of converting going on there or trying to sort of win over people. They're very explicit. We believe X. If you aren't fully on board, you're a target and you're an enemy of us. So we're not really seeing any indication that they are softening that approach at all as they are increasingly under pressure. Mm-hmm. Two last interesting points I want to bring up about the report is they spend a lot of time talking about the attacks that are ongoing in the Philippines. That is one place you could argue that they've shown some success in their attacks. And so that's not really strange in terms of they want to highlight successes as much as possible. But it is curious what's going to happen if that's kind of the only place where they can show success, because it's not in their traditional area of operations. The Middle East is kind of really their focus, and remains to be seen how much, if at all, sort of the Philippines or some other location outside of the Middle East might be where they pass the torch to. And then the last thing that most people look to is Ramai is known for putting out a section in their magazines called Just Terror Tactics, which is supposed to be more specific guidance for homegrown violent extremists or for people who might be inspired to conduct attacks wherever their home may be. This issue did not have that section. And so that's mildly unusual. I think this year, we're in July, so there's been 7 issues this year. I think in 4 of them, 3 or 4 of them, there has not been this sort of guidance. So I don't know how much to read into it, but they don't take a lot of work to put together. Mm-hmm. And so they certainly know that when we read these, and by we, I mean when counterterrorism personnel read these, we tend to focus on those. They've remarked on that. And so the fact that they don't include that in there, you know, is kind of interesting. It would seem to be a low cost way to sort of generate, you know, more interest in discussions. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And do you think that could potentially be because they're focused on, you know, territorial control or focused on motivating their current soldiers?
I think that's exactly it. I think when you read the articles over the past few months, they spend a lot of time, and most of it is because they're translating and just republishing stuff that they're disseminating internally. But they're spending a lot of time trying to keep the morale up of the folks who are in Iraq and Syria now. You know, yeah, I know it looks bad, but we're going to win in the end and all that sort of talk. So there's a lot of keeping morale up. And I think they would love to see inspired attacks in other parts of the world, but I think they need to focus closer to home right now.
Excellent. Well, Dean, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.